first part of that folder is an index, which delineates what is inside the folder. As far as your meeting agenda is the next section. Review by occupational licensing as to what is happening and occurring with House Bill 112. The Attorney General's view, review of House Bill 112 and what the status of the court case and pending constitutional questions are. There were some constitutional questions, as pointed out by staff in the Department of Law on House Bill 112. Those questions are in your packet in tab 3. You have an updated, a brand new sectional of House Bill 112 that's new and accurate. You've got an update from the AG on Osejek and where that case is right now. You have a copy, in case you lost your other 10 copies, of a synopsis of Osejek. You have a copy of the legislative intents for House Bill 112. There were two of them. The House and Senate did not pass the same letter of intent. There were two separate letters of intent. Both of those are in your packet. They do not have the force of law, but they do tell you where the legislature may be coming from on this issue from the House and Senate. You have a copy of House Substitute Senate Bill 112 Resources, and you have a copy of the Senate CS for CS for House Bill 112 amended Senate in the latter part of that. If you will turn to the meeting agenda, we have a quorum present. And we have absent Ralph Yucusa, Layman Hoffman, and Nick Pascala, and Gail Rainey are absent. We have online in Nome Matthew Laya. And is there any old business to come before before we go down the agenda?
Can I just correct you on a couple of the names?
I like the way you say my last name. Aya.
Right.
Aya. Okay. All right. Thank you. I appreciate that. I went through school as a maiden name of Okazala. So believe me, I understand what it's like to have the name mispronounced over and over and over. So I do apologize to you.
Also, it's Ralph Iluska.
Thank you.
Ralph Iluska.
Thank you. Iluska. Representative Davidson. Yeah. Thank you for joining us today. We have just begun. There's a green folder there in front of you that will show you the agenda in the second section. And then there's an index in the first page that shows you what's in that section. Is there any old business from anyone to come before the group?
I just have a question.
Back
on the attendance, is Representative Navarre with him? Is he online?
Representative Navarre is absent. That's not been listed here. Thank you, sir. Is there any other comments, old business? Is there any objection to the agenda? Hearing no. Yes, sir. Lou.
I'd like to propose it.
Lou, you're online.
Oh,
so.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Tell Matthew what you're proposing.
All right, Matthew, can you hear me? Matt?
Yes, I can.
Luke Pamplin. I'd like to propose, if it's okay, that we select a chairman before we go through the business stuff, because the reason I'm suggesting that is that I'm going to be bringing up several items that I think we're going to need a chairman to help focus the task force. And if we don't have one,
I agree.
The only reason I did it this way is because Mike Davis asked me to arrange all of this and do all this. I thought we could go through just the organizational part, the informational part, and then we could select the chairman, because I put it together and it would be difficult then for someone to go through this who hasn't put it together. That is the only reason for the order.
I think we should select a chairman first.
Makes no difference to me. Would someone like to make a motion?
I so move.
Second.
To do what?
To select the chairperson before.
There's a motion before us to select a chairperson at this point in time. All in favor, signify by raising your hand. Matthew?
Raise your hand, Matthew.
I raise my hand.
Okay. Is there anyone opposed to selecting a chairman? All right, there's no one opposed. We'll select a chairman at this time. Are there nominations?
This is Paul Johnson here.
Paul.
I nominate Jan Fink.
I second that.
Nominations don't need a second.
No.
I nominate Bob Hinman.
Okay. Bob Hinman, Jan Fakes. Are there further nominations?
Move that nominations close.
Is there any objections to closing nominations? Hearing none, nominations are closed. Is there discussion?
Question?
Randall?
Can we hear whether or not people are, you know, are interested in doing this, if they have the time, et cetera? I mean, is this something you're willing to take on?
Oh, thank you, Bob. We can do this with my office staff. I've already contacted the Department of Interior, BLM, Parks, Fish and Wildlife for their information. I've been in contact with a couple of possible lawyer resource people as a consultant in drafting legislation, because we have a constitutional issue on both the federal and state level. So we've done some preliminary work, and yes, I believe myself and my office staff would be able to do this.
This is Bob Hinman. Yeah, I'd be willing to do it. I'm obviously not in the same position the senator is as far as staffing is concerned. It would take a little more organization, I suppose, for me to acquire that type of support that you already have. But if that's what's desired, I'd be willing to do it.
Further comment? Okay. All in favor of Mr. Hinman being Hinman being chairman?
What do you want us to do? Raise
your hand. Sure. All in favor of Jan Fakes being chairman? I guess. Thank you very much.
Matthew, what did you say?
Hey, Matthew, are you voting, sir?
No, I'm abstaining from voting.
All right, Matthew. Thank you very much. All righty. If we could go to the verbal reports, please. I've asked both Fish and Game and Occupational Licensing to bring the committee up to date, to bring a status report to the effects of House Bill 112, what the issues are out there, what the problems may be, what they're encountering with it, just to give us an update as to what's happened in the last about 6 weeks. Suzanne? Are you ready to do? Oh, okay. Lou?
Yeah.
You want to do it?
Yeah. Let me first, Mr. Chairman, Madam Chairman, let me first introduce the people who do not know her, Suzanne Miller, who is working with the task force from the beginning. And the reason is Suzanne is in charge of our information management program, Division of Wildlife Conservation. She does supervises all the statistical work, information compilation, et cetera, harvest reporting that comes in from areas, reports that back out. And she has, her staff also does all the geoprocessing, map making, et cetera. And Suzanne will summarize to you where we are in terms of trying to get resource-based maps generated for this subject we're going to be working on. On the Guide Outfitting Resource Area Mapping Project, back when the former task force was in place, Randall one day in the heat of argument and discussion and everything agreed to RSA to Fish and Game about $50,000 last year. And that was based on money he had at that time, we thought he had, to help us get moving on mapping of areas, geographic areas, and resource information into one composite map where the task force and plus commerce at that time, anyone else, the guide board could look at it and benefit from it. But as it turned out, Randall didn't have as much money as he thought he had available for this, but he did RSA to us $12,000, which we promptly put into support an analyst program or data entry clerk for 2 months, and we have made a lot of progress, even with that relatively small amount of money. That's the cost of staying in the fishing. Anyway, Suzanne, why don't you just quickly summarize for everyone where we are on this. And the reason this is really important, by the way, for new task force members, is our charge, of course, is if it's feasible. feasible and possible to develop a system, an administrative system, resource-based system, to manage big game guide outfitting in the state. The only way that's going to be done is with stuff on maps where people know who to go where and do what and all this other stuff, if we ever have a system like that. And this will show you how we have, right now, in place, fish game, big game information, computerized, and how guide outfitting areas or use areas or whatever would come up could be incorporated into this quite easily.
Matthew, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Thank you. This is Suzanne. In 1983, we initiated a uniform coding system for recording of all big game harvest information. That system is along the game management unit subunit lines and consists of a geographic system based primarily on drainages. This last year, with the money that the Department of Commerce and Economic Development RSA to us, we digitized the game management unit boundaries and the boundaries of those harvest recording units. Just to give you an idea of what they look like, I'll show you a map here. This is the Kenai Peninsula. And right here we have, black lines are the game management unit subunit boundaries. We have 16B here, 15A here, 15B, 15B, 15C, 15C, 9A, 9A, 16B. And within each one of those unit subunits, we've broken the state up along major drainages, minor drainages, and what we call mother drainages, which are the very large drainages, Yukon, Copper River, etc. And all of our harvest reports for sheep, caribou, goat, moose, bear, etc. are coded to one of these geographic units. And we will be able to display in the computer harvest rates for each one of these small areas. This will be the basis of our work in terms of defining guide output resource areas. We've also digitized pertinent geographic reference points. This particular map is on a regular USGS quad map. We haven't digitized the whole map because it becomes very cluttered. But what we have done is digitized major reference points such as mountain ranges, lakes, rivers, villages, roadways, etc. And that's been completed. We're in the process of doing some editing on it. And we anticipate having the, to this point, completed by the end of the summer. Does anybody have any questions?
The green, yellow, and orange lines are what?
Different levels within the hierarchy. Remember, we have three levels: a mother river, a major river, and a minor tributary. So that's it's telescopic in scope. The reason for that is hunters do not often give us specific locations detailed enough for us to tell exactly where, for example, on the Susitna River, an animal may have been taken. So we code it to the level of specificity that the hunter has provided. Paul, did you have a comment?
Yeah, Suzanne, has this been done for the whole state?
Yes.
Shows you what $12,000 is in the right hands.
Impressive. Yeah, very impressive.
What are the other numbers?
These are the actual numbers that we've given to each one of these little individual polygons. So if you were to shoot a moose in this particular polygon, then your harvest ticket would be coded down to this level. And we could call up from the computer the number of hunters who hunted in that area, the number of hunters who took animals in the area, et cetera. Of course, our information is only as good as the information we get from the hunter.
The key point, of course, on this is that there is a geographic-based resource map that ties right now directly into management of big game. It can be used if we can develop some kind of system. I mean, it's, we got that's the base point. The hard part, of course, is what kind of system has overlay on top of that. Thanks, Suzanne. The next point I want to talk about, if you remember, the task force requested the department to go for funding that would allow us to put people online to coordinate the development of a resource-based area mapping project to include not only the coordination role from a biological standpoint, but also the technical support. In other words, people to work at Suzanne's shop to do all this. we put into the legislature a request for $90,000 for FY 90 to do that. Legislature cut in half to $45,000. We do have appropriated $45,000. What that'll do is a pay for a seasonal wildlife biologist at three level is what I intend to do right now at that point, to start working and collecting information. Does not leave funds to get all this stuff back down on paper. At some point, maybe not this meeting, but our next meeting, we should seriously look at that in terms of how we're going to pay to do all this from a technical standpoint. But I do not have the money in our division to do this otherwise. It's not part of our budget. Our division of administration modified the hunting license form to include the affidavit of non-rested hunting moose and caribou. And if you remember, that was one of the recommendations of the task force. The Department of Fish and Game has done, and when you go back and look at the report, especially the new members, if you look at the recommendations of the task force, the department has done every recommendation in there for the Department of Fish and Game. That's one quickly if we just summarize. If you go back and read it, you can see if it says change your form, we change the form. All that's been done. We also modify all our harvest reporting forms to include information on commercial services use. That's a pretty big change because now we are asking specifically how are the hunting of doing this, which will compile them with the old information plus stuff Randall's going to have and perfection. So we should have a lot more thorough and comprehensive evaluation of knowledge of what is going on in Alaska commercial use of big game. As I see it, the task force, besides our major charge, you can break it down into three areas of priority work. We need to establish criteria, which the guide outfitting resource areas will be defined. And we don't have to do it right now, but what I will do is pass out to everybody what this is just a draft, tentative thing, listing factors and criteria that can be used in defining a guide resource area, guide outfitter area. This is just our thinking internally. Of course, this group is going to have to decide how they want that done. But these are just straw men. So I'll pass it around. And let me just make kind of a little briefing here and look at it later, however you want to do it. But that's the main job we're going to have. The next job is we're going to need to establish a public input process here. Because when it starts, I don't want 400 guide outfitters jumping down my throat or my staff's throat and trying to tell us how to do this. Because quite frankly, I have about that much tolerance for that kind of crap. And what I want done, if we can do this, is get this set up where the task force is kind of guiding our department on how we want this done. The public can use the task force and the department, but not go beat up on Suzanne or her computer people, you know, saying, draw this line right here, or by God, we're going to do this. And that's what happened. You know, and I want to avoid that. And I'm real serious about that point because we'll never get anything done if we allow that to happen. And it won't be just guys who come, guide out, it'll come for everyone. So we need a public process that will allow for public input, but will also kind of put some sideboards around the people, you know, people who are interested in this subject, knowing that there's a way for input and there's a way that's not going to get it. Walking into our office, which they can walk into anytime they want to, but disrupting the entire statistics section because they don't like something, that won't work. The third point is that, just like before, the task force, in my view, should give formal concurrence to the process, what we're doing, and to the products. And it's real important, I believe, for all task force members today to recognize that when this is all done, for this to go anywhere, we've got to have a report. Clearly states what's going on back to the legislature, and hopefully it can be unanimous push from all of us to whatever we end up with so that it be successful in trying to get it implemented. And the report should include financial constraints, the criteria, description of the public process, and the recommendations for administrative and legislative actions, if any. For example, one thing that could happen is probably a recommendation coming out of here, the DNR modified leasing procedure or something like that. Madam Chairman, that's just a comment.
Is there any comments or questions for Lou and the Department of Fish and Game, Lou or Suzanne? Matthew, do you have any comments or questions?
No, I don't.
Okay, thank you. I would like to welcome to the task force Representative Hoffman from Bethel and Ralph Iluska from Anchorage to the task force. Welcome. We're glad to have you here. Very special. Any comments for Fish and Game? Yes, Bob.
Although the department has been for a while recording harvests of various species by one level or another of these coding units, apparently you're going further and breaking them down, but I don't believe in the past data like the residency of the hunter, that is resident, non-resident, alien, or whatever, has been included in that breakdown. Are you modifying the harvest tickets or the reporting forms of some sort to gain this information and put it on there?
All of the harvest tickets have been since 1983 recorded to the Uniform Quality Units. So we do have information on residency of hunters. Yes, that's been done uniformly since 1983.
So we could go back then and not only work from this point forward as far as recording the data, but you can go back and retrieve some of that, at least, information for past use then. Is that correct?
That's correct, with the exception, of course, of the question that we just had this year pertaining to commercial services. We don't have any historical information of that nature.
Are there any other comments or questions from Fish and Game? Lou, I'd like to ask one if I can. I've had two inquiries into my office. I don't know if the other legislators have concerning the restricted goat hunts now, that they have to have a licensed guide for goat hunting. Has the department encountered many problems with that, and what have you done to mitigate, or what's the situation? I think the law goes into effect for them on July 15th, and so the task force did include this year's goat hunt into those new restrictions and requirements.
Yes, Madam Chairman. We've had quite a bit of public resentment, I guess would be the word, an outcry from possibly non-residents and for some residents who had trips planned with their non-resident friends, not very relatives. And right off the top, Suzanne, maybe you can recall, I think it's about 300 non-resident goat hunters, somewhere in that range, 300 or 400 a year. And there was quite a reaction. What we're dealing with is explaining to the people who contact us that what the law is, what it's going to be, what the requirements are, and we try to provide them as much assistance and help as possible if they're still interested in hunting goats if they're non-residents. Besides that, we haven't done anything on it because it is the law.
I'd like to make one addition. We have contacted every non-resident applicant for a goat permit through our drawing system by letter, asking them if they are aware of the law and if they would like to withdraw their application if in consideration of the law. Bob?
Just as one little insight into that, one of the other hats I happen to wear is chair of a local advisory committee in Juneau, and our last meeting, to my considerable surprise, the subject of the goats being on this mandatory guide list was brought up, and there was a great deal of emotional response in that advisory committee in Juneau, wondering why it was done, why they hadn't heard about it, why there wasn't public input into that decision. It was a pretty negative reaction.
I would just like to make a comment that that section did not go uncommented by a lot of people, so I think you don't win that battle, I guess.
Yeah, it was clearly the intent in the Senate. I don't know what House Resources did. It was clearly the intent to include goats. I mean, they did many public hearings, and it was not even controversial with the senators on the Resources Committee. They definitely wanted to include that, and they did have a public comment. Representative Davidson, if you want to speak about House Resources.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Representative Kurt Renard chaired these meetings, and it was my understanding that it was clear that the intent was to include the goat.
Yeah, there's
and
not
there
even
was
a loophole
considerable
in the law.
There as well.
It's just one cut and dried in. So, does the department department feel that anything else needs to be done, it's just letting it work through this year?
Madam Chairman, given that that is part of the law now, it's very predictable that the first year, especially when it comes out in May, you know, whenever the law passes, a lot of people have plans, and there's a bunch of people. All we can do is continue to provide information to answer people, but we have put out a lot of news releases. I failed to mention that. We did everything we could do to notify the public, and Suzanne wanted to rewrite letters to the permit applicant. That's all we can do. I think in a year or two, people won't necessarily like it, but it'll calm down, and we'll go from there.
Okay. All right. So it's working. I mean, there's some hassle, but you don't think it's an unworkable situation. Oh, great. Any other comments? Michigan. Randall, occupational licensing, that was great. Thank you.
Well, given the fact that the law, House Bill 112, took effect on May 11th, with a couple of fairly immediate provisions, we've been spending our time trying to get the forms out and getting the word out. We took very seriously the complaints that we heard consistently last year from people that they didn't have any notice of these new requirements. So we have spent a great deal of money, and you may have seen that we've had half-page ads in the newspapers, and we put them in most newspapers in the state, regarding the transporter requirement, the commercial use permit requirement, rent holder requirement. And then we've also communicated directly with the guide outfitters regarding the new requirements for the insurance. The insurance requirement is effective on July 15th. So we sent letters out to them very recently saying you have to provide us proof of this information by the 15th, but the 17th actually, because the 15th is Sunday or Saturday or something. By that date, and technically, obviously, after that date, if we don't have that information, they're not in compliance with the law, so we'll be corresponding with them to find out. It's sort of difficult to figure out who to correspond with in this group because all guide outfitters have to carry the liability insurance of $300,000 for a single incident, $500,000 maximum per year. And then the requirements regarding aviation, though, are in insurance. Are applied across the board to all classes of guide outfitters. So regardless of whether you're currently what used to be called a registered guide, now a guide outfitter, or an assistant guide outfitter or a class A, if you are involved in flying with clients, then you have to show experience and or commercial pilot's rating, and the plane that you're using has to be insured as well. So we've been trying to get people up to speed. They're easier to contact, obviously, since we know who they are. The real difficulty here, I believe, is the transporter group, because those people need to have the Part 135 and or the Coast Guard licenses if it's applicable. There's been a great deal of consternation, particularly since these large ads began appearing on the part of persons who don't have Part 135, who have in the past years been obviously transporting big game hunters into the field. And what we're seeing is people claiming that the law says for compensation, what's been occurring is people have been saying, well, actually I have a lodge and they pay me $500 a night for the lodge and I'm only giving them transportation in the field as incidental. And we're not buying that. We're telling them that they're obviously receiving compensation for their services, regardless of what kind of service, whether they're transportation or lodging, and you need to have Part 135. It's going to be just like the GOAT issue, except I think it's going to be multiplied because there are a lot more problems with those individuals in the state. And the enforcement there, they won't give us their names when they call us, of course, for obvious reasons. So it's going to be playing hide and seek here. The fiscal note that attended this bill did fund a half-time investigator, and that we're in the process of going through getting that position established. And the purpose of that position is to go to the major transportation hubs and check out what's exactly happening in terms of people landing and taking off. And we've put out a bid for the decal for the airplanes, things of that nature. So we are moving fairly quickly. The major obstacle that we're encountering is the fact that there's not a big game commercial services board that has been appointed as yet. And some of these things we had to go forward with without a board. And we were somewhat awkward about that and somewhat hesitant, but we we did talk with the AG's office, for instance. The insurance requirement is in effect on July 17th, whether there's a board or not. So we decided we weren't going to postpone waiting for them any longer and went out with the notices. And the requirement, the same thing with the commercial use for NP. So what we did was sort of pick what we thought was a modest fee and gave that format as well. And we're just going forward in that way, letting people know that this is, in a sense, tentative, but we've considered our only, if we're going to go forward with this under the deadlines that the law provides, we've got to go forward. I would say where we're most, the most ticklish situation that's resulted in that regard is not having, in terms of not having the board, has to do with the new requirement on that assistant guides have to sit for an exam before they can be licensed. Previously, you could walk in, show that you're 18, and we would give you the assistant guide license. Now you have to take an exam. The oil spill shows up in strange places. Many assistant guides are working for VECO this summer instead of hunting. It seems to be more lucrative, and so many of the guide outfitters are having difficulty finding minions to do the work. So as a result of the new law, the guide outfitters, they need to employ assistants. They have to get new persons. They have to take an exam. So what we've done is we've taken some questions from the old guide exam, have some additional questions written in the area of first aid and things of that nature. And we're going forward with giving an exam in the middle of July, July 21st actually, with a filed deadline of July 17th. We're going to go ahead and give that exam. Those people who apply, we're giving them a piece of paper that says, we understand that there isn't a board and that you are developing this for these purposes, and that if I fail the exam, I'm out of luck. Because we don't want them to take the exam and then if they fail it, say, well, geez, there wasn't a board who approved this exam, et cetera. We can't win that. So they're going to know that they're taking it. If they take it and sit for it, they're agreeing to live with the results. It's not going to be difficult. I doubt if anybody will fail it, frankly. But we do feel we need to give the exam, and it will be
good quality control.
Right, good quality control. Right. Well, I think that we need to do something of that nature, and I think we can do it by using the current examiner.
Questions for Randall?
Yeah, Randall, I'd like to see a copy of that new exam. Is that possible? In the
no.
Members of the task force?
No.
Is that possible?
I don't think so.
Why?
I can check. None of our exams are open to anyone. So.
The exams aren't even ended.
I'm over 18. Maybe I'll just go take it.
There's another one. what we're going to do is pick up.
Are you joking me?
No, I'm not joking. No.
These
are exams.
Exams are exempt from the Freedom of Information Act by state law.
We're picking up animal identification questions, which we think is important. We're picking up first aid. Health questions, things of that nature, that generally they should be able to pass and won't be too difficult. And I think it's a legitimate sort of interim measure until the board is established. So, other than that, I would say that our goal has really been to get people who have to be licensed. We've gotten a lot of questions about the new section of the law having to do with permission to be on state, federal, or private lands. And what's going to happen if someone has identified an individual who is on that land and they don't have permission to be there. Our position at this point is they should let us know, and then we'll contact the guy. We need a name, obviously. Contact the person who's licensed. Since it's a new law, our goal would be to inform them of the provision if they don't know, and then have them contact the owners of the land raise this issue and either get that permission or not get that permission, depending. And after giving them notice, then if they still maintain on that land, then we'll go forward from there.
Bob, you had a question?
Well, just a comment, I guess. I hate to start my tenure on this group out by complimenting Randall, but...
Hey, I'll write it down.
I must admit that I was impressed with the amount of information that had been put out. Not only did I see the ads in the paper, but I guess because I have a six-pack license for taking fishermen out on charters, I got the whole packet of all that information. Very impressive, and I appreciate it.
Ken Fanning, the call.
I have two questions. Randall, on the exam, is there or are there plans for other mechanisms to give the exams at other or later dates and or different locations? In other words, through officers.
Ken, make sure you're talking to my sponsor, Matthew, to stay in the loop.
Yeah, I'm sorry. The question was, are there provisions being made to take the assistant guide exam at other dates or other locations?
We're giving the exam in Fairbanks, Juneau, in Anchorage this time. Before, we've basically only given it in Anchorage. We're only doing it this once. We're doing it in July because we sort of feel like we're out there on a limb with this one anyway. And if they haven't got their assistant guides by the end of July, it's not going to make a lot of difference anyway. And so we're not really going to give it again until the new board's established and we've had an opportunity to have them look at it. We could think about that, but we basically sort of figure we're July 21st ought to be it until the new board's established. But we, you know, if there's a real demand, we'll play that by ear, I guess. If after that date there are people who still haven't got licenses, we're not going to give this exam every month. We'll give the department here does their exam. That's crazy.
You're in Alaska.
But we can certainly see if there's additional need, we can play by ear, I guess.
You have another question, but let me announce that Representative Navarre has joined the task force. Welcome, Michael. It's good to see you. We are going through an update. We had Fish and Game give us an update, and Randall Burns of Occupational Licensing is giving his an update as to what the department has done to comply with the law and sort of questions and answers.
Yeah, just one other one. I guess your major reason for that is the fact that the board simply not appointed. It seems to me that not on my driver's license, there might be situations that the examiner could offer a lot of conscience about it because many assistant guide decisions are made, rather short notice. But the other question I had is when you call, if you find out a name of somebody who's trespassing on private land or on federal lands, and it's going to be your intention this year, as I understand it, to contact that person by mail or phone call and let them know they've got a problem and if they do so. Are you also going to, at that same initial contact, contact the landowner?
Well, I'm assuming that the only way we're going to know about this is the landholder is the one who's letting us know, unless, of course, there's a third party involved. That's a good question. I mean, to date, it's all been landholders who have been contacting us, not anyone else. We haven't contemplated yet that next step. We can think about that.
I'd appreciate if you would, because obviously on the federal lands, if the federal landowner calls you, they've already kicked the person off. So because it's illegal to be on federal lands without a permit, and they'll take action. But I think that most of your comments, at least on those federal lands and or state lands, would be by a third party. And in many instances on native lands and private lands, it would be a party. Another party. So I guess it would just seem automatic that you would, in the event it was not the landowner, that you would notify the landowner.
Paul Johnson.
Yeah, Randall. I guess I'm kind of lost here. I thought that this landholder issue that they were going to have to show you that they had a concession permit or approval from the landholder before that their license was continued to be valid.
They have to do that to Fish and Game, not to us. Now, let's get clear about this. The law just says that before you can land on a piece of property, you have to have prior authorization. But they don't have to show that to us. We're just assuming that they've got their prior authorization. There are some provisions of the law that talk about that if before a non-resident can, I believe, can get a permit, right? They have to, Fish and Game may require, doesn't say shall require, that the non-resident show proof that they have permission to be on that land.
Lou?
On that point, what it is discretionary authority. If you said may require, it's strictly permanent, not for any other non-resident hunting, and the at the time that we would require them, very few. An example of where it may be required if you're in El Kodiak.
Well, I guess that's something that's called down here again. I guess that's something that's fell through the cracks, Randall, because I guess back in my mind, a kind of clean way to clear that whole thing up would be that if somebody...
I think it would be unrealistic to require every single person to send us a piece of paper saying that they have proof to be where it is they're going to be every time they're going to be there. I don't want to get in that business. I think we ought to deal with the situation of they're going to be in that land, they better have the authorization, and if they're not, then we'll take action from there. I mean, we can think about that again. I'm not sure that we want to also be trying to figure out how we're going to keep track of all those pieces of paper for all those pieces of land and how it's going to be meaningful information once we got it.
Cassidy.
I have one more question about that exam. I'll make one more stab at this. I really would like to see the exam myself, just to see how it would look from a villager's perspective. Do you have somebody on your staff that is doing that, looking at the exam to make sure that from a village perspective, villager's perspective, that it's not a totally unpassable exam?
Not specifically, no, we do not.
Randall, I think that's a great question. Could you have the Department of Education, some of the specialists in cross-cultural delineation of exams, look at that exam and see if there's a cultural problem or a bias built into that exam for the villagers? Those folks are experts on that, and I know they evaluate the Stanford Binet and several of the standardized tests that are used throughout the state will ask them for cultural bias, and it might be a very good idea for them to evaluate your exam. Not only this one, but the others also. Would that, and would you be prepared next meeting to give us a report on that?
Yes.
And if you need a letter requesting that,
I think that's a good idea. And I don't have any problem doing that.
Well, I think it's just a real good question, and it's one of the focuses of the group is to allow all Alaskans to participate in this. And if we've got a cultural bias built into the exam, large user group, and that wasn't the purpose of here.
I don't have any problem with that. Yeah, I don't have a problem
with that. If you had trouble with the Department of Education, let one of us know, and we'll be happy to help you with that. I'm sure Representative Marr or Hoffman or Davidson or myself will all help intercede there.
Sure.
Further comments? Lou?
Randall, what's the status of the reporting forms for the guide outfitters and transporters, the forms that are going to require information back from them so that you and we would have
I think they're basically completed and soon to go out.
I'm wondering on that, and I don't know if we had a chance to coordinate the standard level on those before they're totally finalized.
I mean, they're not totally finalized by any means. If you want to take a look at it,
it wouldn't hurt maybe to have your
report. Sure.
Are there any other questions for Randall? I would like to call your attention in your notebook about the Department of Law's memorandum to the governor concerning this law. There are three issues that the Department of Law felt were mildly unconstitutional or they had a question about. Not enough to recommend veto, but there is a question there that I'd like for you folks to look at. The first is in the second paragraph in which the membership of the Big Game Commercial Services Board, one of the board members was to be chosen by the Board of Game. That does interfere with the governor's authority to make appointments on the executive branch. That is in question. And for those of you who are concerned about the native landholders representative, please note the last sentence in that paragraph where they have questions as to what exactly that means. We might want to put in some amendments to clarify what the task force meant so that we have a specific type person in that slot. The other one is on page 2. It's the third complete paragraph, first sentence, where it's a residency requirement. You know how we have trouble with residency requirements in this state. On a Class A assistant guide having a residency license, they say that that could be, on the Interstate Commerce Clause, a constitutional question with the federal law. And so those are the ones that they pointed out. Again, not enough to cause a veto, but I wanted you to remember those, and we may have to have an amendment on the native landowners or there just to clarify. Yes, ma'am. Ms. Cassie.
I'm a little confused about that. I don't know why there would be a question. If it's someone who represents native landholders, it wouldn't matter to me if they were native or non-native, as long as they were competent in representing native landholders' interests.
I just call that to your attention to make sure that the questions there were, if they are of concern, we'll fix it. If they're not of concern, then we don't have to worry about it. Representative Mark?
Thank you. I just, on the first section regarding the governor's broad power of appointment, I was just wondering, I don't have enough, I don't know exactly what the language of the law is now, but could that be interpreted just as a, they appoint them by making that recommendation to the governor?
The governor must make the ultimate appointment. Another board, any alphabet in the state, cannot appoint their person.
Right.
It's got to be the governor's clear appointment. The other alphabets can recommend a list to the governor or a name to the governor, but the governor is in no way obligated to appoint that person.
During when we were drafting to the AG's office, and they called around and said, no, no one thinks it's a real problem. And of course, it shows up here. But the APOC has the same thing. And they always raise that as an issue. So they may want to consider changing it.
Well, I think what happens is the people who review these bills for constitutionality or veto or not veto are real picky technicians. And they're going to look at every little teeny tiny detail. So the governor has got the full menu before him before he makes his decision. And these folks are supposed to be extra picky. And I think she's pointing this out so there are no surprises if there is a potential lawsuit or if the Board of Games made their own recommendation and the governor didn't follow it.
Right.
So I don't think it's a little problem, but at the same time, I want everybody to be aware of it. Okay, any more comments for our professionals in fishing game and occupational licensing? Yes, Matthew. Please go ahead.
One thing I couldn't understand is you asked a question a while ago and asked a person that goes gold hunting needs a licensed guide to take them out hunting. On the other hand, you know, if you're out of the state and if you come over to Alaska, then if you want to go gold hunting or sheep hunting for that matter, but you need a licensed guide from Alaska, but yes, we have a lot of licensed guides that are not residents of Alaska. How do we clarify that, or what does the law say about that?
Lou, can you answer that or clarify that for Matthew?
I clarify part of that. Matthew, the law is that non-residents will have a guide outfitter for certain species, brown bear, goats, and sheep. As far as guide outfitter requirements, I'll let Randall address that. Non-residents can be guides, and that is legal.
Yeah, that, Matthew, it is true that you do not have to be a resident of the state of Alaska to be a guide. They dropped as this memo says, they dropped the requirement that you have to be hold a resident fishing license in order to hunting license in order to be a guide, because you should be able to a substantial number of master and registered guides. I don't know that you could call them residents in the state of Alaska.
That's what I shouldn't understand. It's a non-resident guiding a non-resident person.
Well, I mean, I guess the way you get around that is the requirement originally, in order to be licensed as a guide outfitter, is going to pretty much require that you have been in the state. For instance, it says... you have to be familiar with the terrain and the game management in which you're licensed. You have to have legally hunted in the state for each of 5 years, and you have to have performed the services of a Class A or assistant guide outfitter for part of each of 3 years, so that clearly you're going to have had an experience of at least 5 years hunting in the state of Alaska before you could qualified for a guide outfitter license anyway.
It's frustrating, isn't it, Matthew?
Yeah, just the implication of we're asking non-residents to be guided by Alaska residents, and we turn around and ask non-residents, go ahead and guide non-residents.
I know, it's called the Interstate Commerce Clause of the U.S. Constitution. We run into it in the legislature on a frequent, almost daily basis, and it frustrates the heck out of us every time. Senator Fanning?
Randall, you have an accurate listing at this point in time of the number of guide outfitters, I guess, and the number of non-residents. Could you tell me that? I keep hearing this lots and lots, and I've been around the industry for a long time, and I don't know of any, so I would like to know the number of total guide outfitters and the number who are non-residents.
I don't have the information that I can get that. What boils down to is that many people maintain Alaska mail boxes, but for a majority of the year are living outside, so the question is, are they residents or aren't they? And I'm not going to argue that. I guess my feeling is that I doubt that there are very many non-resident addresses, but we do know that many of those people reside outside the state for a significant part of the time.
Well, I mean, but the point is, it is legal to have a non-resident address and be a non-resident and be a guide. And that, I think, is the thing that frustrates Matthew, and I think it frustrates a lot of us. But from a practical standpoint, the question is, does that happen very much? And, I mean, are there, in fact, very many people who are registered guide outfitters now in the state who are non-residents? I think it would be good if that information is available. I mean, I think the task force ought to know how many guide outfitters there are in Alaska today and how many of them are non-residents. I think that would be valuable information.
Randall, a check with the permanent fund dividend list is a quick and dirty way of ascertaining that information. It's not totally accurate, but it gives us some idea. So you have two homework assignments for next meeting, Randall. The cultural bias
so
test
far.
On the yeah, so far.
That's enough.
And the number of non-resident guide outfitters. Further comments or questions? Matthew, have we answered your question?
Yeah, pretty well.
Okay, sir. Thank you. Any other comments or questions before we get on to our proposed work plan? Yes, Paul.
Yes, I guess Bob just brought up a point. It's Paul Johnson here, Matthew. Bob just brought up the point. An alien can be actually a guide.
See, nothing in the regulations at all would prevent an alien theoretically from becoming a guide.
I think the alien would have to have a green card. If they have a green card, then they are in essence a citizen of the United States. Therefore, I think the Interstate Commerce Clause would intercede on their behalf. If they don't have a green card, then they aren't considered a citizen of the United States, and then the Interstate Commerce Clause doesn't play, and if they don't have the rights and benefits and privileges,
and I don't think they're issuing green cards for 5 years. The ones that are coming out of West Germany and places like that are 6 months to a year. So I don't know the answer to that. It's possible, but I
was going to use an assistant.
Yeah. Now, the assistant, we have said now, has to be a state resident, and that's the constitutional rub that we could get into trouble with.
No, that's Class A.
Oh, yeah, right. Okay, Class A. Right. Further comments or questions? Okay, what I'd like to do now is move into a discussion of where we go from here and what we do. Representative Springer has agreed to help us later on down the road, and he's here as an observer today and really doesn't want to address the group, but will be at our disposal later on in the fall, which I think is great. So we have two issues to decide today, kind of our course of action, where we want to go, and then how you want to meet. Whether you want to take July and August off and start in September or September, May hunting season, you want to hit it real hard in October, November. I mean, think about that as we discuss the work plan. And let me tell you a little bit of what I've done in some background research and where I was going. I in no way have a planned agenda. Please believe me. All I was trying to do was grope with the problem and lay out a couple of alternatives for you today. And so that we can direct staff on further research for the next meeting and we can have some data in front of you. So let me kind of bring you up to date. What we have in the state of Alaska is a mess with our fish and game and our wildlife and our subsistence laws. We're under federal mandate and a court order on subsistence on the Kenai Peninsula that could affect the entire state, as you all are well aware of. And we are under a state constitutional issue over the exclusive guide areas being unconstitutional, unfair, totally biased, etc. I called the Department of Interior to today, and I talked to their attorney, Lars Hanslin, who is their Park Service concessionaire lawyer, who works up the park, the National Park Concession limited entry areas, guidelines, permitting, regulations, and criteria. He is willing to do anything for this committee, and the Department of Interior is willing to put help with staff to help this committee work on a limited entry type concession that would be open to everybody, that would have restrictions in the way of regulations and criteria that would be based on maybe bag limits on the game. And they're willing to give their resources at their disposal to help us do that. And they're preparing all of their regs, their laws, et cetera, and have them here for us the next meeting. I also talked to BLM. Terry O'Sullivan is the lawyer in charge of the concessions and the permitting for BLM. He's based here in Anchorage. He does all the commercial recreational permits is what they call those. And they will be giving us all their regulations and forms and guidelines that they use. Also, Fish and Wildlife has a series of permits or concession permits that they use. And they are willing to put all of that information at our disposal and help us coordinate, if we so desire, a system that would mesh with the federal government, so it would use some of the criteria and guidelines the federal government uses to do a restricted or a concessionaire type system across the state. I also talked to Bill Horn. Bill Horn was a former deputy commissioner of, or deputy secretary of Interior. He is willing to use his expertise at the disposal of this committee in the form of being a consultant. He's prepared to have a resource attorney with his law firm in Washington, D.C. help us draft a law or the regs or the criteria, whichever we deem appropriate, to present to the legislature on January 15th. All of these folks at our disposal if you wish to use them. The other alternative is to do nothing. Let Fish and Game and Randall proceed with what they're doing. And let the system go for a while, and the do-nothing alternative is there if we choose to do that. The other alternative, because we are under the constitutional mandate and the federal mandate on subsistence, is to try to work with the Department of Interior and mesh our plan in with something that's worked with them. There's one oddity with the department. The Park Service has an act of Congress allowing them to restrict concessionaires, to limit the number of concessionaires. And they are sending us that law. It was passed years ago. But that is the only agency within the Department of Interior that actually has a law backing them up, a congressional law backing them up for restricting uses. The rest of them all just do it on regulations with criteria, carefully crafted so that they're walking that line between a free enterprise, total anybody can use the system, and looking at the resource, the recreational facilities, and limiting the number of concessionaires that can comply or at least meet that criteria. So let's throw it up for discussion. What do you kind of want to do? Where do you want us to go on research on this? Or how do you see the task force proceeding? Representative Barnes?
Thanks, Senator Bates. I just want to say, first of all, with respect to your having your own agenda, I think if you had not agreed to take the initiative, we may not have had an agenda up until now. I certainly appreciate it, and I've seen the staff and something you really seem to be interested in, no exception. So I appreciate it. I think, as far as I'm concerned, the idea of going with a limited entry type of program causes me a little bit of a heartburn. I may be willing to accept it in final analysis after looking at some of the alternatives, but that's certainly not going to be my first attempt.
Could you have a comment about working with the Department of Interior or any of the agencies there, and with what they do, and going through their process and seeing if there's something we can cut and paste?
I definitely want to look at their information and go through it and see how I think we can apply it to Alaska and see how it works for them, and see what constraints we have where we couldn't apply what they're doing. And, you know, if we're talking about the limited entry
the Department of Fish and Game and Commerce can only go their own little way under what's under the law right now. I mean, that's part of we can build. Randall can't do any more, and we can't do any more, period. And we're not going to do any more. Not for that. That would be illegal. Task force, my understanding, was expended to deal with this problem, and it is a serious problem in relating big game commercial hunting and uses to wildlife management conservation. That's no reason we're here. And so I don't think there's an option whether or not we're going to try, you know, me, that's why we're here. We're going to try to develop options, if there are any, where a system can be implemented to regulate big game guide outfitting in a way that will allow for free entry and exit by all people. And I wouldn't even use the word limited entry, because that has been struck down. That is unconstitutional. We cannot come up with anything in here that is called limited entry. We might as well forget that. What we can come up with, possibly, is a system. And it's really going to be a two-step system, if it exists. One is going to be where, from the state perspective, we are in control of how big game guiding is conducted in this state on all land, regardless of who owns the land. That is a real key point. The National Park Service does it one way. The Fish and Wildlife Service does it another, as Senator Bates explained. Forest Service does it another way. BLM does it another way. And let me tell you, on and on down the line. And that is not good for wildlife. Wildlife is a state resource. Park Service has fully announced it intends to restrict guiding and use on their lands, and you can mark my words, that's going to happen on even the preserves, where the citizens of Alaska will not be able to use wildlife resources. They made it very clear that is their intention. If we do not come up with a system that they will join with us and let us implement, like before the Osagek ruling, some kind of system the state has control over, what you're going to find happen is all the federal agencies are going to go their own little merry way. They're not going to do it the same way. They never have done it the same way. They've all done it differently. The state will be sitting here, and from an enforcement perspective and a wildlife management perspective, it's going to be chaos. Now, that's really the choice we've got as a state. We can either watch chaos and confusion, or we can try to get some control on this and move forward. That is really the decision. And again, to me, it'd be nice, I don't know if it's a packet or not, but whatever the legislature said about extending the task force, I think it says that what we're supposed to, what our charge is. And, you know, whether somebody doesn't like whether goats are in there now or not, that's really not the business of this task force anymore. That's done. We have one charge, I think. And I'm not sure we can do it. It's a very difficult task. Extremely difficult. It's going to be real hard to do what we're here to try to do or looking at. I will say the department will do everything we can to help this task force. I want to add, though, and I think Senator Bates is right on target, saying we've got to think of a work plan during this meeting. And I want to refer you back again to look at this criteria list, because what we're talking about here is a resource-based system, if it can be designed. And the only way it can be designed is for this task force to say what they want in it and what options. What kind of options? And I would propose for your consideration to think not only of one system, but of three or four systems that can be tried and tested. Because as soon as one system is implemented, it's going to be challenged in court. Bang. As soon as it's done. Somebody has to wait until the system's finished. But as soon as it's done, bang. They can sue it. They can sue Randall, they can sue Fish and Game, they can sue somebody. Whoever's doing it can be sued. So we better have some backup systems. Or it could be when it's all over, we aren't going to have a system. We're just going to give up and say, okay, guy outfitting is going to be uncontrolled except through a license system and through every agency and landowner's will at that time, how that's going to operate. And I can guarantee you that in a long-term perspective, that's not the best for wildlife, and it's not the best for the state in terms of economic benefits. And I'll give you one other, and I'll get off the soapbox. Non-resident hunters that come into the state pay three-fourths of the management cost of the state of Alaska. You'll hear this stuff from resident hunters that, boy, we pay it all. Not true. Not true. Non-residents are paying the bucks for fish and game management. They pay it through federal taxes, on Pittman Robertson things. They pay a lot more than we pay as residents, and they pay a tremendous amount more for their hunting and fishing licenses. They are paying basically the majority of cost of management. Now, you tie that fact with who controls most of the land in this state, the federal agencies that Senator Bates just summarized. And the state's sitting under the tree in the back corner somewhere. And so tied into all of this is how the state would influence one of its most important resources, renewable resource of wildlife. That's really what's at issue here, in my view.
Further comments? Senator Fanning.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I guess I would use a little bit of caution along with the comments Representative Barr suggested that I think that we should get for this task force, if we can, as quickly as possible, the federal resources that you talked about and have the different attorneys, both from the Park Service and the DLM and the Forest Service and the Fish and Wildlife Service, assist us. But I certainly wouldn't want us to even consider adopting carte blanche some of their proposals. I understand that they have a lot of experience in walking a line, and obviously they are issuing and have in every federal enclave throughout the United States specific concessionaires or priority rights usages, whether it's on Forest Service land or whatever. And I think it's essential that we have that, but we also know that the Park Service is hell bent for leather to try to eliminate commercial uses, and this board and this task force is here to figure out how that meshes with proper game management in the state. So I think we want to use caution. Also, it's pretty obvious that the governor is not afraid to walk fine lines. It just came out in the paper 2 days ago and did not veto a piece of legislation that he feels is going to be found unconstitutional, but that he thinks it is worthwhile to try it. So I think that if we have something that is based on solid wildlife management concerns, solid conservation concerns, then I think we should go with it and perhaps have the background. So I guess what I'm saying is that I think we're all busy. I think that it is absolutely imperative that we do something and come up with a plan urgently. So perhaps the suggestion to have an independent source provide us with information quicker than what you suggested, if I heard correctly, that took into account all the comments of these different federal agencies in that research and compiled for this group proposed legislation, preferably by October or so, rather than January 15th. Then we would not, number one, we would not eliminate the native landowner or private landowner from the sole input, because I think that we need to do that, and I think that the individual in the council that you referred to has quite a bit of experience in dealing with native lands. And I think that it's really important that we mesh this federal land ownership situation, private land ownership situation, state concerns and concerns of this task force, and have somebody else to put that back, because I don't think that 16 of us can get together enough on a weekly basis through the summer to do all that. And if I think I heard you correctly, that somebody else is offered to do that who has expertise in all those areas, then maybe we should consider that proposal and then consider getting the task force back together to look at some drafts, or give us 14 days to put in our individual concerns to make sure that they're digested along with this other stuff. Try to get something through with it, because we can't let chaos reign for a single year. We have a choice about it.
Before I call on Ms. Cassidy, is chaos reigning out there?
No.
I mean, let's not beat the drum for chaos if it's not, if it's going along just fine.
Let me respond to that question if I can, because I have personally have my own permit, and the United States Forest Hello. Service.
Can you please speak up?
Thank you,
sure.
Matthew. Yes,
sure.
He got lazy.
Yes. In a single game management unit in Southeast Alaska, the United States Forest Service had 27 new permit applications for hunting this year, this spring. They denied each one of them on the basis that until June 1st, the Supreme Court decision was in effect. Anyway, they told all those applications and all those permittees that they would not even solicit comments on them as they normally do when a new guide outfitter makes an application until after June 1st. Well, June 1st is passed, There is no sun, it's hunting season right now, so there's obviously no chaos. But that federal agency in that area has no direction as to what to do with these new applicants, and there are several of them. And I think that if we push this, the quicker we get something, the better off we'll be.
Okay, let's let Lou comment and then Ms. Cassidy say a question.
Sorry about the coffee, Kim. There's chaos in the sense that the federal agencies have stated to public record that they're going to sit around and wait for the state to come up with something, and they gave us 2 years, if I recall, and what it was running for 2 years. While they're doing that, I'll change the word, thank you, Nancy, from chaos to confusion, because depending on whose land you are, there's different rules. And so when you're out there, nobody really knows what the rules are. And it's kind of phony in a lot of ways because in the word, you know, in a printed word it says this, but when you're out there they kind of do it different ways. I mean, it depends on who the district manager is, who they run into. So there's no consistency at all in what's going on out there in terms of big game guiding and outfitting and the regulation. The only consistency actually is the test and the procedures that Randall Shop does. As soon as you leave that arena, it's inconsistent. It will become chaos when more and more people get involved in this and there is less and less restraint. And if there's one of the few good things about the Wells bill, I've heard Paul mention that, is that has changed a lot of things in the state right now, where people that would be going in partnerships and actually had started them to start doing things on various lands all over the land, a lot of those things have kind of gone in a temporary holding pattern because they can make a whole lot more money leasing their boat to Exxon for a while. A lot of things that are not happening right now that will happen down the road. And we, it's lucky for us because we have a little bit of a buffer, a little bit of a break maybe to put together some systems that might work. In terms of what the people who live out in the rural areas think, again, from what I know about it, it's very confusing. There's all kind of things, rumors going around about their, things that are not true regarding guide outfitters and changes and restrictions and not restrictions and concerns about big game population. So unless this stuff can be brought under one umbrella where the citizens do not get 16 different messages depending on what agency they're talking to, there is going to be chaos. There's going to be confusion.
Ms. Cassidy?
Yeah, I'm not worried about chaos right now. We've spent 20 minutes talking about chaos. We haven't done any work. I'm fully optimistic that this task force can come up with something for the legislature to look at. And I don't think that we have to spend time or should spend time worrying about whether what we come up with is lawsuit proof or whatever. Let's just come up with something. Concerning the schedule, I was looking at my calendar the other day and I'm going to be gone most of the summer. I've got travel plans into September right now. But after that, you know, I'd be more than happy to get a regular schedule of meetings going. Just a comment also on the federal agencies, you know. The National Park Service, I think the people there, you know, they live in a world of their own. And they do, you know. We were talking to them about the systems up in the gates of the Arctic area, and they were so far off that they were comparing subsistence to grazing rights. You know, they said, you know, in the lower 48, we allow grazing rights for a certain period of time, and then it's then it's phased out, you know. And I said, if you think you're going to phase out subsistence, you're crazy. I think we have to keep that in mind, and I think we also have to keep in mind that the resources is what's important. I think I'm more comfortable talking about uses than users, because you start talking about users, it's, people get all upset. The other thing was I forgot to say when I was commenting on this clause, on the letter from the Department of Law, that I'd like to hear from Ralph and Matthew to see if they agree with me that you know, I don't think that the member who represents native landholders necessarily has to be a native person.
Okay, Matthew and Ralph, did you hear Ms. Cassidy in the Department of Law in the second or third tab on the first page down at the bottom? The Department of Law references a section in House Bill 112 that deals with one member. wrote this as to what that meant. And so I threw that out just to point that out to the committee, because if you want to have an amendment, or if it needs clarification in your minds to be more specific, then we might want to think about that for inclusion in the law in January. That's my only point. So, and Ms. Cassidy is just further referencing.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think that could easily be corrected. I think you just put a clause in, let the Federation made a representation of all the major landholders in Alaska to be appointed by the board members of the Alaska Federation of Natives, as long as it's concurred by the governor.
Yeah, Matthew, you can't do that because the governor's got to appoint. So maybe you could clarify that he could be submitted a list of names, but the governor's got to do that. But I think Ms. Cassidy's point is that there doesn't need to be any clarification. She thinks it's just fine, and that's what we're discussing here now.
Okay, Ralph?
Well, if it's, I looked at it quickly, and of course, it's the first time I've seen it, but if the Attorney General identifies that it's not clear, then we should make it clear. I think I testified early at one of the task force meetings, and my interest was that as a landowner or representative of the landowner, is that it be a member be on a task force or on a guide board, whatever was created, that represents private landholders. Okay, so, and right now we own a lot of the land, but there are other private landholders out there with equal concern about the activity that's taking place on those on the land. So I think it's, you know, while we are interested in having the Native landholders represented on the task force, I think we recognize that we've got to use the term private landholder. And as to who it is, you know, whether I want to appoint an attorney or be the representative myself, or it doesn't matter. Person will represent our interests that we appoint, or, you know, that we help to select, or a governor appoints.
Okay. It sounds like, from all of you, it's a non-problem. I mean, it's, you're happy with the way it reads. Okay. Further comments? Randall?
Make one comment on that. I also think that, given that language, that would be, if we felt like we didn't want to go back to the legislature, I think we would do it in regulation. We could refine what the board meant by that.
Further comments about the work plan and or schedule of meetings? Mr. Johnson.
Madam Chair, the only thing I'd like to have included in your list there, which Ken's been a couple of different times, the Forest Service, which you haven't had.
I didn't contact.
Yeah, I know you haven't contacted, but it's a very important, and there's two different, of course, the forests, there's a tree action and the Congress, and they don't necessarily coordinate with each other either. And they don't even coordinate within their own region either. So when you get a hold of somebody, it's got to be somebody who can speak for both of those and speak for all the different districts within. Each one doesn't even communicate with each other, as Ken can tell you.
Madam Chair?
Yes, sir, Randall.
I'd like to know how people feel about, I've sort of been thinking that what we would do is, if these organizations were willing to serve up some member of their staff to participate with us, we could sort of ask them to join us at the table in terms of advising, you know, ex officio members or something of that nature, so they can participate in the discussions all along. I think that would be real helpful, so that they could hear our concerns on a regular basis rather than just, it seems to me what happens otherwise, if they just show up and we just complain to them, then they leave. And I think if they could hear on a regular basis what the issues are, participate in that process, I think we'd be better off.
How do other members of the board feel that, Bob?
Madam Chair, I knew I'd get to disagree with Randall.
It's been an hour and a half, Bob.
Yes.
So, Matthew.
I must admit, I'm not crazy about that idea. Just from the standpoint that this has been brought up, the policies and procedures of the Forest Service are going to be radically different from those in the Park Service. And from the other federal agencies, each goes his own way and his own procedures. And if you're going to have that, you just about have to have one from each of those. And I think that's getting a little bit much and a little bit cumbersome. And while I think it's great, we try to get as much information and assistance from them, from their experience, as possible in working on something that will work for us. I'd hate to be thinking that we were going to head the same direction they are, because I certainly echo several other statements that have been made. Their philosophies are definitely not to increase the amount of opportunity, if anything, to decrease it. And I would hope that this group is not going that direction. But if we can get some help from them, that's great.
Those comments, yes, Lou?
I agree with Bob on that point. I think Randall is correct, though, in saying that we should have this at our table, so to speak, more than we did have.
They want to come. I didn't have the authority to invite them until this meeting. So they would very much like to participate, and they want to coordinate.
The key point that they have indicated, all those agencies, if the state of Alaska can develop a system that will limit the number of guides in areas, which is exactly what those federal agencies are doing right now in different ways, then they will jump on board with the state system. Just like, no, I'm not saying same system, but that's the way it was before. The state regulated the guides. That is what they want. That's what they want under 100 million acres of land. And it would really, if we don't watch it, if we get, I deal with these people every day. I mean, you get three different refuge managers in a room to get a meeting. They'll sit there and argue amongst themselves. You can't even get them to agree amongst the refuge. I don't want to be here arguing.
Okay, well, is there anybody who has a different point of view about inviting them as a resource and to sit at the table and hear their plans, or I'll have it all prepared for you ahead of time in an easier sort of digest to see if we can take out the salient points. And what I'd like you to, is there anybody who has a different point of view on that? What I'd like you to address now is giving me permission to address the House of Senate leadership or the Ledge Council, whatever is appropriate, about hiring a consultant like Bill Horn of that caliber to help us draft the legislation if necessary, and to coordinate with these federal agencies. Could we have some comments about that? Senator Fanning.
I would just have a question. If you think that can be done in a relatively timely manner, it sounds to me, if you're going around the room and talk to other people, that a lot of meetings this summer is probably not likely that we'll have a great attendance here. And if that's the case, if have somebody else help coordinate that research, then have several meetings as we did in the fall to review something else. I think it'd be pretty necessary for us to have at least a draft work document in front of us. Are you the opinion, having talked to Bill Horn, that he can assimilate that type of information, at least in draft form? And I think we would want in draft form so that we could all talk about it first.
Okay, here's what I'm concerned about. He'll do what we ask him to do, and he's available to do that. But at the same time, I don't want a subcommittee of this group off doing something to present to the whole group. The beauty of this group, and the reason this group has gotten as far as it has, is because Henry made you all sit down together day after day, hour after hour, and hash it out. So I think the beauty of this group and the credibility of this group is because we did work together, and we did spend all those hours, so I don't want to destroy that. So I don't want somebody coming in and taking that thought process or that hassling time. It's easier to have somebody else do it, but the beauty, the credibility of this group is that we did it ourselves, even though it may have been painful. So what he is willing to do, or what I told him, and I have made no commitments to him at all and told him circumstances, was to assimilate the information to the Department of Interior, what they do, what can work for us, what are the options that would be constitutionally as close as possible for us to look at. Give us some options. And then we look at that options and we hassle them. And also what we have to do is test them. Because everything works in a room like this with the sunshine. There's no problems on a day like this. And you get out in the field and Lou or Randall or you guys and outfitters have to start working with the stuff and it all falls apart. So we have to have some testing time. We
Thank you, Chairman, Chairperson Figgs. One of the current concerns I have of all due respect to Mr. Horn, I still think that we need someone with perspectives from this group. And I can appreciate your concerns about a subcommittee type of situation. But I think it would be counterproductive for us to take just a draft document with the perspective of, say, someone with that federal perspective, because I think that we have some expertise in this room that better represents what the Alaskan perspective is. So that would be one of the concerns I would have as far as having someone like Mr. Horn present us with a draft document.
Okay, I guess I need to clarify this. He would present us with options, not a single document. That's my point. I don't want to have somebody else do our work for us. Just the options that are constitutional, what the options are in setting criteria, kind of like what Lou has set out here, but fine-tune it, get some details on this, on option, but many options, not just one.
So then, if I may, Madam Chairman, the options, the perspectives on those options, what input, for example, would our Department of Fish and Game have?
They would just probably be in the middle of it. I certainly hope so. And he's offered. Go ahead, though.
The thing I handed out, there's actually two things going on here, I think. We're two different zones. Chairman is thinking of, I think, from a legalistic perspective, correct me if I'm wrong, I think of what is viable, what may be viable. What I passed out was the old mud on the wall, truck crew, getting things done, practical field application of how to worry about a managed guide outfitter. Regardless of what system is ever put together, it's still going to end up on those maps, if there is one, Suzanne showed over there. That's where all this is going to be, with little numbers on there, four-digit numbers, and say, okay, in this area, all your guides can operate, or whatever, or the, on state leases, whatever it's going to be, it's going to end up on this. This will be the product of whatever system is legally defensible and administrable. This has to go on regardless, or at the same time, I should say, concurrent with, I think, what you're talking about. So there's really two main functions. One is, how do we want to proceed in terms of developing options? And I think what Senator Bates is proposing is to hire someone to help us develop those options for our consideration. They're not going to make the decision. We would just view what they come up with. At the same time, I'm asking the group to recognize that in order to have any kind of system at all, within the next 10 years, we're going to have to do this resource-based map.
Representative Barr?
Yeah, I had a comment about, and a question. The comment is that the task force, and this representative of the task force that went before the legislature last time, had a lot of credibility because the task force had done such a significant amount of work. And that's why it's very important that when we get towards the fall and get recommendations back, that the task force, the members of the task force that are going to go before the legislature, are able to answer the question. Task force with the credibility that they have currently aren't able to answer the questions, they're not likely going to be very successful in getting something pushed through the legislature, because this is something that you're not going to find an awful lot of people within the legislature who are going to take the time to learn as much about it as the task force.
one thing. I also, putting on my administration hat here, would like to remind you that there's somebody who's not here today. That's the Attorney General's office. And I do think we have to remember that any of this stuff is we're going to have to deal with, we'll want to hear from the Department of Law in terms of whatever we develop, in terms of how they feel it will fly in terms of this agenda.
Randall,
right.
They're not here at their own.
Right, oh, I understand.
We
I know
really
that.
Wanted to
oh,
hear.
I talk, and I know that. But I just want to remind us that because this will obviously get down to that, and I think that we need to keep that in mind.
That's my number one concern. I don't want another lawsuit.
Right.
I know. We can't make it perfect, but we can